It's 4 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
U.S. Secretary of State Kerry reaffirms close ties with Egypt. Mauritania's president wins re-election in a ballot boycotted by the opposition. I'm Victor Beatty, reporting from Washington. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry met Sunday with new Egyptian President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi in Cairo. Mr. Kerry noted the long-standing partnership between the two countries, saying they will work together to counter terrorist threats. The diplomat said the Obama administration supports full funding for the U.S. aid package to Egypt.
President Obama and the administration have proposed providing the full amount of aid, the $650 million, that comes with the first certification, and the House of Representatives has passed that amount. It's the Senate that had a slight reduction and a different formula. We will work that out.
He also called for Egyptian authorities to uphold universal rights of free speech and free assembly. His call for press freedom comes as a court in Egypt prepares to rule on a case involving three Al Jazeera journalists accused of reporting false news and aiding the outlawed Muslim Brotherhood. The United States has expressed concern about a strong crackdown on dissent since Mr. Sisi took power as the country's military chief last July, ousting the Muslim Brotherhood. In Kenya, at least 20 people were killed in inter-clan violence in the north Sunday, further destabilizing one of the country's most volatile regions. The clashes between the Dagodia and Gare communities began in mid-May and has left more than 40 dead in Wajir County near the Somali border. Mauritanian President Mohamed Ould Abdelaziz has won another five-year term with more than 80% of the vote in an election boycotted by the opposition. Mr. Abdelaziz faced no major challenge to his re-election in Saturday's ballot. The opposition sat out last year's parliamentary elections, citing biased organizers and a flawed electoral process. Talks on taking part in this year's election broke down in April. Mr. Abdelaziz came to power as a general during a military coup in 2008. He won a contested election in 2009. He has been seen as a staunch ally of the West in the fight against terrorism. The French press agency citing residents reports a suicide bomber Sunday rammed his car into a military checkpoint in the Nigerian town of Grosa in Borno State, killing three soldiers, an attack blamed on the Islamist militant group Boko Haram. In politics, the country's ruling People's Democratic Party toppled the main opposition candidate for the post of governor in the southeast state of Ekiti with almost 60% of the vote. The result is seen as a boost to the ruling party ahead of next year's national election. Well, Heather Murdoch reports the PDP and the main opposition are already blaming each other for the country's bloody insurgency in the northeast.
At his home in the Niger Delta, Avi Joseph, a local leader within the ruling People's Democratic Party, or PDP, says the opposition funds the violence, trying to make the country ungovernable.
Where problems of kidnapping, Boko Haram, all that are coming, it's a style of trying to destabilize the ruling party and its an opposition.
He says Boko Haram's increasing strength is evidence that wealthy politicians must be supporting the group. The opposition he speaks of is the All Progressive Congress, or APC, a mega party formed last year when several opposition parties merged. Christian Ononjacha is the assistant secretary of the APC in Delta State. He blames the ruling party for failing to stop the insurgency.
What they are now trying to do is to throw the blame on us that we are involved. But we are not involved. We are not in charge of the federal security apparatus. They are in charge.
He says the ruling party is wasting time pointing fingers when it should be fighting the insurgency. Heather Murdoch for VOA News, Abuja.
In sports and World Cup football action Sunday in Brazil, Portugal scored in the closing moments of the match against the United States to gain a 2-2 draw in Group G. Earlier in Group H, Belgium clinched a berth in the second round with a 1-0 win over Russia, while Algeria defeated South Korea 4-2. In Somalia, traders in Mogadishu are doing a brisk business selling football merchandise amid a relatively peaceful period in the country's troubled modern history. Meanwhile, bad news for Cameroon as Captain Samuel Eto'o will not start against Brazil in their match later today. He's still recovering from a knee injury. Cameroon lost to Croatia earlier 4-0, ensuring an early exit. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, June 23rd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry urges Egypt to embrace democracy, press freedom, and due process.
The United States is very interested in working closely with President al-Sisi in order to help make this transition as rapidly and smoothly as possible.
An analyst said Egyptians are not in a mood for inclusiveness, particularly when it comes to the Muslim Brotherhood. Nigeria's ruling party basks in its victory in the Ekiti State governorship election. South Sudan's government denies its defense minister has resigned. And South Africa says President Jacob Zuma's health is fine.
From the point of view of the presidency, the doctors attending to the president are satisfied that there is no reason to be concerned about his health. He's fine. He's back fully on duty.
Mark Maharaj is the spokesman for South African President Jacob Zuma. And Cameroonian fans at the FIFA World Cup are not giving up as their country takes on Brazil today, Monday. Those stories plus Mark Oman's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Secretary of State John Kerry has called on Egyptian leaders to uphold universal rights of free speech and free assembly. VOC Elizabeth Arid reports from Cairo, where Mr. Kerry met over the weekend with new Egyptian President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi.
One of Secretary of State Kerry's key messages during his tour is inclusion. At a news conference with his Egyptian counterpart, Mr. Kerry pointed to Washington and Cairo's longstanding and deep partnership and said the two would work together to counter terrorist threats. But he acknowledged both sides have things we can do better and called for upholding universal rights of free speech and free assembly. Relations between Washington and Cairo were strained by the overthrow of Egypt's first freely elected president, Mohamed Morsi, and the ensuing crackdown on the Muslim Brotherhood, from which Mr. Morsi hails. A senior official traveling with Mr. Kerry was quoted as saying the U.S. does not agree with the Egyptian government's view that the Brotherhood is linked to terrorist groups. The official called the situation more of a political challenge than a security one. Speaking shortly after his arrival, Mr. Kerry alluded to the country's deep divisions.
This is a critical moment of transition in Egypt. The United States is very interested in working closely with President al-Sisi, in order to help make this transition as rapidly and smoothly as possible.
But it's unclear how much clout the United States has in Egypt and in the region after the fallout from its invasion of Iraq and what many here consider Washington's mistakes during the Arab Spring uprisings and their aftermath. Political sociologist Saeed Sadek of the American University in Cairo says while the United States remains an important player that can't be ignored, Mr. Kerry comes at a time America has lost a lot of trust among Arab leaders.
Egyptians distrust them because of the support to Morsi. The Saudis also are not enthusiastic about Obama. He failed them in going forward with the Syrian campaign. Also, they blame him for what is happening in Iraq. Everybody's blaming America for what is happening in Iraq.
It's a view that makes Kerry's job to help find solutions more difficult when his country is considered the source of many of the problems. Elizabeth Arrett, VOA News, Cairo.
A Middle East analyst says U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry's call on Egypt's new leaders to embrace democracy and press freedom may fall on deaf ears because Egyptians at the moment do not seem to be interested in those issues. But Nizar Al-Sayah, chair of the University of California, Berkeley's Center for Middle Eastern Studies, says the U.S. must impress upon the Egyptians that while the United States may be restoring military aid, Egypt is obligated to respect human rights. Regrettably, Al-Sayah tells me that there doesn't seem to be any appetite in Egypt at the moment to include the Muslim Brotherhood at any level of Egyptian political life.
I think that the real problem that Secretary Kerry is facing in Egypt right now clearly is the fact that Egyptians are not interested in hearing, particularly from the United States, about freedom of the press or freedom of expression or even fair trials, if you will, particularly for the Muslim Brotherhood, people that the majority of Egyptians today come to consider terrorists. And I think that that is the major conflict that exists. So, in a sense, I do hope that at least Kerry's message will not totally fall on deaf ears, and it would be understood that, look, while we are restoring military aid, you're still not in our good books yet, and you still have to ensure a return of some of the freedoms. I don't think Egyptians today, unfortunately, they are no longer concerned with these issues. They actually think of them as minor issues.
Even though General Sisi has said that, I think he said over the weekend, that he's willing to review human rights legislation or human rights issues in Egypt.
Sisi did not say, the terms that he used were still very vague and very unclear. So I'm not really sure that what he said can be taken very seriously or very significantly at this stage. Besides, the proof of the pudding is in the eating, so we'll just have to wait and see. He has said quite a lot of things in the past, which he did the exact opposite of. So that statement for me is an empty statement. We'll have to wait and see.
I think the secretary made mention that when he talked about inclusion, and that the whole of Egypt is stronger when all its people have the right to affiliation and freedom of expression, whether they are Muslim Brotherhood or not. Are the people in Egypt, you think, are willing for a change at this point?
No, absolutely not. In fact, I think that is the only part of the secretary's message that has absolutely no takers whatsoever in Egypt. You have to remember that the Muslim Brotherhood feels that they have been betrayed by the United States, and they actually feel that what happened is a military coup that was orchestrated by the United States. So in a sense, Egyptians, or at least the majority of Egyptians today, are not willing to hear anything from John Kerry about an attempt to include the Muslim Brotherhood back in the political process, mainly because of the fact that getting them out of the political process was a very, very difficult thing after 80 years of being underground and 1 year of being completely in power. It is very clear that there is no appetite in Egypt for any attempt to include the Muslim Brotherhood at any level.
What do you make of that? I think over the weekend, a court confirmed death sentences that was passed on the, I think, Muslim Brotherhood supporters. Does that mean those sentences will be carried out?
No, not at all. In fact, it's very clear that the government of Egypt was almost using some of these sentences as a warning, particularly to the Muslim Brotherhood folks, that if you continue to engage even simply in demonstrations and what have you, we may use the full force of the law to prosecute you and, in fact, imprison you forever.
Nizar Al-Sayah is the chair of the University of California, Berkeley's Center for Middle Eastern Studies. You're speaking with me from Berkeley, California. The spokesman for South African President Jacob Zuma has dismissed reports that Mr. Zuma is in poor health. This followed a local newspaper report suggesting that Mr. Zuma is suffering from high blood pressure, diabetes, and heart problems. Presidential spokesman Mark Maharaj rejects the newspaper report as rumor mongering. Maharaj tells reporter Peter Clarty that doctors of President Zuma have declared him to be in good health.
From the point of view of the presidency, the doctors attending to the president are satisfied that there is no reason or cause to be concerned about his health. He is fine. He is back fully on duty. At the same time, we would like to state clearly that he will not engage in gossip and rumors around his health.
So what assurances will the presidency give to South Africans, especially hearing these in newspapers?
The record is very clear. When the president needed rest, we said so publicly. The doctors confirmed it to us. Then the doctors carried out tests, and his half-yearly tests made it a major examination. He was kept in hospital for 24 hours for thorough checkup, and they discharged him satisfied with the results. And he is now back with his public engagements and as well as his office work. So what more can I say on that? The record is there. It speaks for itself. And I'm saying that the doctors believe that there is no cause for concern with regards to his health condition.
Some of his opponents are saying that to prove President Zuma's good health, his health records must be made public. What do you make of that accusation?
Why do we have to prove rumors and gossip to be unfounded? If we were to spend our time engaging with rumors and gossip, we'd spend all our life just repudiating rumors and then having to prove, whereas the gossip does not require to be proved.
But they are saying that when President Zuma, after taking a rest and coming back, he appeared to have lost weight, and that this is proof of what they claim to be his rather poor health.
I have had a flu at the moment and have lost 1 kilogram. Does that warrant saying now that therefore the person is ill or that the person must prove that you are fit? I don't believe that that is a correct approach. I think tiredness is something that affects everybody, and I think presidents do work extraordinarily long and hard hours.
Some supporters of the ANC are saying these are politically motivated. The opposition are saying they are justified in asking these questions for the presidency to answer. Well, what do you say to that?
I don't want to engage, as I said, with the gossip and rumor mongering around the president's health. I do not want to give them credibility. I have told you what the doctors have told me, and that should be sufficient from the presidency side.
Mark Maharash is the spokesman for South African President Jacob Zuma. He was speaking with reporter Peter Clottier from the capital, Pretoria. It is Monday morning, June 23rd, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Let's give a shout-out to our listeners on Radio Hot Cocoa in Bamenda, Cameroon. Daybreak Africa time is 16 minutes past the hour. A spokesman for Nigeria's ruling People's Democratic Party, the PDP, says the party's victory in the Ekiti State gubernatorial election is an unequivocal statement that the people prefer the PDP over main opposition Action Congress Party, the APC. PDP candidate Ayodele Peter Fayose on Saturday defeated incumbent Governor John Kayode Fayemi. PDP National Publicity Secretary Olisa Metu says the election indicates a trend towards the PDP by the people of the Southwest, especially ahead of the 2015 presidential election. Metu tells me that President Goodluck Jonathan also deserves credit for his commitment to free and fair elections in Nigeria.
First, we are happy that the election was free and fair, very credible, and for that we owe it to the president of Nigeria, who insisted in ensuring that there was adequate security and that the votes would be counted for the people.
Does the PDP see the Ekiti election as something that could happen in the 2015 election?
We think it's a trend for this part of the country, for the Southwest zone. The fact that they are speaking with one voice, the fact that they are speaking that they like the party, the fact that overwhelmingly we won in every single local government is a message that has been sent. The message is that we love the party. The message is that we love the president. The message is we like what you're doing and we want you to continue.
Your party sounds like your president, Goodluck Jonathan, is going to seek re-election, but yet he has not done so. When is he going to announce that he's going to seek re-election?
Well, it is his own democratic right to decide whether to run or not. For now, I think that he's more focused on the issues of security, on issues of the girls, on other parts of the country where we have insurgency, and that he to ensure that his appointed aides and ministers and officials, that they perform very well so that the people will keep on voting PDP. I think it's more focused on performance right now to think about re-election. That's what I think. And Nigerians appreciate that he's thinking about the good of the nation for now instead of his own personal future.
The PDP is calling on the APC candidate to concede defeat.
He has done that. He has conceded. And he has congratulated our own candidate. I think it goes a lot to show that he has good qualities. We think that the candidate of the APC, the governor, is actually, he's too decent for his party. He's a gentleman. I think he should have been a PDP member. We appreciate his concession. We appreciate his being very noble and being very pragmatic in the circumstance.
The party is congratulating President Goodluck Jonathan for his legacy of credible elections. There are elections coming up in 2015. What is the government doing to make sure that those elections are going to be free and fair?
Well, I wouldn't know what the government is doing, but I'm sure that they will create the enabling platform for free and fair elections. But I know what our party is doing. We are preparing for free and fair elections where we hope to win. We are taking our campaigns to the nook and crannies of Nigeria. We are talking to all the people. We are not engaged in propaganda. We are not engaged in deceit. We are not engaged in hiding tension or telling lies to the people. We are making promises that we intend to keep. We are showing records of our achievements. We are showing that in spite of the people that instigated violence and important insurgents in this country, that this government has been able to perform. And we are listing out our achievements. That is what we are doing. And we are taking it to every single corner of this country to campaign.
Olisa Metu is National Publicity Secretary of Nigeria's ruling People's Democratic Party. You're speaking with me from the capital, Abuja. The spokesman for South Sudan's president has denied media reports that President Salva Kiir refused to accept the resignation of Defense Minister Kuo Myung Juk. The Sudan Tribune newspaper reported over the weekend that Mr. Kiir rejected Defense Minister Juk's resignation following an alleged disagreement with top military officials. Spokesman Ateni Wek Ateni tells reporter Peter Clotty that the reports are mere rumors aimed to create tension and undermine the administration in Juba.
The Minister of Defense, General Kuo Myung Juk, has never tendered any resignation to the president. And the president has never received any resignation from any minister. There's no any minister that has even hinted that he might resign. We just learned of, you know, of this resignation from Sudan Tribune, which said an official who did not say his name. That are the type of people we incite always.
But there are concerns that there are divisions within the president's administration, and that has left to some people even deserting and defecting to the opposition.
My friend, to be honest with you, know that is close to this notion. We say that the people are actually defecting. No, there are few people who have actually left, who actually decided to go to the Akhmachar side on the basis of ethnicity. But within the government, within the executive, there is no single minister that has tendered any resignation.
These are words that I'm hearing from South Sudanese. They have questioned the leadership of President Salva Kiir. They're saying that he should resign. What do you say to those criticisms?
Well, it's healthy always to have someone criticizing your performances. It is something that the Constitution of the Republic of South Sudan allows. But what I tell you from the point of knowledge, not just from the vacuum, President Salva Kiir is better placed to continue to be leader of this country. And I tell you, and you take it from me, if President Kiir submitted his resignation now, there will be no country called South Sudan. All the SPLM leaders will all be actually rivaling for leadership, and South Sudan can just slip into chaos.
So you are basically saying that President Salva Kiir is indispensable. So he is South Sudan, basically. Is that what you're saying?
No. You are taking me out of context. What I'm just trying to say, South Sudan is in crisis as we speak now. And because of the crisis that was generated by the coup plotters on the 15th of December, the citizens are not trusting themselves. And Salva Kiir continues to be the uniting factor, because Salva Kiir is a person who can forgive, you know, pardons, and is a person who can, you know, accept some sort of, reconciliation so that the people of South Sudan pull together. If you bring anybody who can come to retaliate, South Sudan can slip into tribal kind of areas, and you will only see warlords, my friend, because Salva Kiir is one of the founders of the SPLM, and the fact that he is the only remaining founder of the SPLM has kept this country, my friend, united and together for at least now 8 years and something.
Ateni Wek Ateni, South Sudan's presidential spokesman, he spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Juba. In World Cup football action today, Monday, Cameroon will play Brazil in Brasilia. Brazil needs a victory to qualify for the next round, while Cameroon has no chance of advancing. But as VOA correspondent Nicolas Pinot reports, Cameroonian fans hope their national team will play better after two chaotic games.
In the few blocks near Mané Garrincha Stadium, hotels have seen many fans from around the world since the kickoff of the World Cup tournament. But the Cameroonian here is quite small. It is not a surprise, as many fans have already left Brazil, heartbroken by the performance of the indomitable Lions during the first two games. Businessman Nilo Tapé is one of the few who decided to stay. He says Cameroon fans are still here, but although discouraged, they will keep cheering for the Lions. He said they will not change their nationality because the team has been ousted from the cup. And even though they will not advance to the next round, the fans will enjoy the game. The trip to Brazil was very expensive for Cameroonian fans, between $78 and $8,700, according to Laurent Jiki, the tour organizer. This former Cameroon soccer player is running against time and money. Some fans left their hotels without paying, and he does not know how he will be able to compensate and make money. He says it's getting difficult because some just left, so he's working hard to find a solution and find money. And Jackie says the tour group returns home on June 25th but he will leave on the 26th to make sure there is no issue. He says Cameroonians have notorious reputation for not paying, and he does not want that to continue. And nevertheless, the few Cameroonian fans remaining in Brasilia do not give up. They hope Samuel Eto'o and his teammates will proudly represent their country and prove the Lions are better than the poor image that they have shown so far. And Moïse Kamgan is an accountant. He says he hopes the team will restore Cameroon's image, even though they are ousted. He adds, against such a big team like Brazil, the players have the obligation to show that Cameroon is still a great country for soccer. Will the indomitable Lions please their fans? The answer comes late Monday.
SBS Nicola Pinot reporting from Brasilia. It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Monday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we focus on the FIFA World Cup in Brazil. Algeria's Desert Fox proved why they are Africa's highest-ranked team on the current FIFA rankings when they dismissed South Korea 4-2 in Porto Alegre on Sunday. This is not only Africa's best result at the ongoing World Cup, it is also Algeria's most notable achievement since their surprise 2-1 triumph against West Germany at the 1982 World Cup in Spain. Elsewhere in Rio de Janeiro, a second-half goal from Kenyan-born substitute Divock Origi propelled Belgium to a 1-0 victory over Russia. This result consolidates Belgium's lead in Group H with 6 points. Algeria is second with 3, while Russia and South Korea have 1 point apiece. Elsewhere, the United States of America and Portugal play to a 2-2 draw in a keenly contested showdown deep in the Amazon rainforest in Manaus. Although Germany and the United States now tie on 4 points at the top of Group G, the Germans hold the edge on account of a better goal difference. Likewise, Ghana's Black Stars, who drew 2-2 with Germany in Fortaleza on Saturday, are third ahead of Portugal, even as they have 1 point each. Meanwhile, Argentina pipped Iran 1-0 in Belo Horizonte as Nigeria edged Bosnia-Herzegovina by a solitary goal in Cuiaba in Group F matches on Saturday. Consequently, Argentina lead the group with 6 points. Nigeria has 4, Iran has 1. As tournament debutants, Bosnia-Herzegovina have yet to secure a point. Earlier on Friday, Costa Rica pipped Italy 1-0, France thrashed Switzerland 5-2, and Ecuador edged Honduras 2-1. Costa Rica lead in Group D, followed by Italy, Uruguay, then England. France top Group F, followed by Ecuador, Switzerland, then Honduras. Staying in Brazil, the curtains come down on action in Group A and B today, Monday. In Group A, Cameroon Challenge hosts Brazil in the capital, Brasilia, as Croatia engage Mexico in Recife. In Group B, Netherlands play Chile in Sao Paulo, as Australia face the outgoing world champion Spain in Curitiba. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry has met with Egyptian President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi during a previously unannounced trip to the region. During the visit, the U.S. diplomat noted the long-standing partnership between Washington and Cairo, saying the two nations would work together to counter terrorist threats. Kerry also called for Egyptian authorities to uphold universal rights of free speech and free assembly. That's it for this Monday, June 23rd edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butte in Washington, hoping that you will make this week a very, very productive one.
Hello, I am Shaka Sali. Join me on Straight Talk Africa every Wednesday as we discuss topics of special interest to Africans, including politics, economic development, press freedom, health, social issues, and conflict resolution. Take your pick. Watch on television, log on to the internet, or listen right here on the radio.
Hello, I'm Kim Lewis.
And I'm Yehiyas Wuhib.
Together we host the Voice of America's informative program, Africa News Tonight.
We present a thorough summary of the day's events, featuring interviews with newsmakers in Africa and the world.
Also, Sunny Young drops in live with sports, and we have features on science, health, and business.
Tune in Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC right here on the Voice of America.